Good evening and welcome to Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth, and with me in the studio tonight is Patrick Stedman. Pat served in the Colorado State Senate since 2009, representing District 31 in Central and East Denver. Pat has been an openly GLBT legislator in the Colorado General Assembly for a long time, and fortunately isn't the only one anymore. I guess there's been half a dozen or...
More than that.
How many?
You know, I'm not sure, but getting close to 10 or 11.
Yay. Yeah. Okay.
Depends. Currently, there are six.
Good. Okay. Six right now. We have the opportunity of some insight from Pat, who has been in the legislature since 2009 and has some things to share with us. One of his early plunges into politics, I think, was with Amendment 2 and working against that. That was an amendment, for some of you that don't realize, would have stripped civil rights from all LGBTQ members of our community. And unfortunately and amazingly was passed by the population of Colorado. Pat helped Gene Dubosky and others to put together a very successful challenge to our Constitution all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court and get that overturned in the Romer versus Evans case. That was one of the cases that was an amazingly significant ruling protecting equal rights for LGBT Americans, which ended up for many people kind of culminating in marriage equality many, many years later. That case has been cited in many, many other cases since then, and hopefully maybe will help us in the ensuing debacle that we're in right now, I would say. He's been recognized by many people. He's won lots of awards, just a couple of them. Denver Regional Council of Governments Distinguished Service Award for his work on aging. Boulder County AIDS Project gave him a Local Legend Award in December, particularly looking at some of the work he did around destigmatizing and decriminalizing sexually transmitted infection law and working on a drug assistance program, chat prevention grant reform, expansion, much, much more. He was on the Joint Budget Committee, which is a very powerful committee in Colorado that kind of controls the purse strings of Colorado for all of us. It's kind of one of those behind the scenes, they're kind of the committee to wield the club, so to speak. And then finally, he got an award at from the White House for Harvey Milk Champion of Change. So welcome.
Thank you, Karen.
So, Pat, tell us just a little bit about you. There's you, the senator, which you just finished last month. Now, it's about almost exactly a month ago. But who's Pat for our listeners? Who are you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just a mild-mannered white guy that lives in Denver, you know, and got involved one day and started showing up and kept showing up, and the more you show up, the more you get asked to do, and the more you're capable of doing, the more responsibility you're given. And before you know it, people think you're the leader and look to you for guidance. If you keep making yourself available, if you keep showing up, you end up being elected and entrusted with more power than you ever expected to have been given. And you have a real opportunity to make a difference in the lives of lots of people in your community when you put yourself out there like that.
Yeah, Pat, I first met Pat, he doesn't even remember this, back when we were stuffing envelopes in Denver around Amendment 2. He's put in the grunt work behind the scenes for years and years and years, which is part of what it takes.
I don't know if people still get together and stuff envelopes like that anymore. I know they don't lick the stamps like we used to have to do. But
that's a good progress in stamps.
I don't know if that still happens, but the need for people to come together and find an outlet for their frustration or their energy that they have to make the world a better place, that never goes away, but it does seem to ebb and flow. And we seem to be at one of those peak points again where people are showing up and wanting to stuff envelopes or lick stamps or whatever it is they need to do to make an impact and to feel like they contributed towards improving our situation, because I think we're at that point again where a lot of people are afraid the situation's about to go retrograde and things are going to get worse. And there's some indications that's very possible. There's also all of us to prevent that from happening.
That's comforting to hear. So what do you see as you left the Colorado Senate? When you look back to 2009 to now, you know, what do you think are key things for our listeners to hold in mind?
Well, Colorado is and continues to be a very progressive state. We do sometimes take two steps forwards and one step back, but as a general rule, we are pretty good on a lot of issues, you know, and we've been leaders nationally on a lot of issues. And don't just think marijuana, although I spent a lot of time in the legislature working on that issue. And I think, you know, Colorado is a leader in the nation when it comes to marijuana legalization. But just specifically to LGBT rights, Colorado scores in the top tier of states in terms of the protections that we have in state law for civil rights and family law, hate crime prevention, equality in the workplace, you name it, Colorado scores relatively well. There's still more work to do, but we're not like Indiana or North Carolina where they're fighting about going backwards. We have some really solid laws in place, and they have proven to be effective and accepted by the public. And whether you're talking about cases about baking wedding cakes or which bathrooms transgendered children use in public schools, we've got really good laws to protect people's rights in Colorado, and they've been enforced, and they're effective, and they're working like they're intended to work. And there doesn't seem to be this incredible backlash that we need to stop that child from using the restroom in the public school. For the most part, our victories are secure in Colorado, and I'm very proud of that.
Should we be alarmed when people talk about at the federal level? What could federal laws come in and destroy all the good things that you and others have done?
Well, I do think we need to be very mindful of what's happening at the federal level. And there's an incredible opportunity for changes at the federal level to come home here to Colorado and force us backwards. But because as a state, we have so much in place to protect people, the feds aren't going to be able to overturn our local state civil rights laws. I hope not. We'll see. I mean, there are ways with religious freedom, Trump card kinds of things that they would love to do. We can't let that happen. But we also need to realize that our state government is an important protection against any kind of federal overreach or the federal government trying to come in and dictate to states what they should and shouldn't do. And frankly, you know, you've heard really mixed messages coming from the leadership in Washington on this regard. They talk a good game about states' rights, whether it's marijuana or possibly even civil rights laws, reproductive health laws. You know, these are the kinds of things that maybe the federal government wants to get out of the way of what states want to do. And if that happens, your local elected officials at the state level, your state legislature, your governors, become so much more important in terms of that, you know, that stopgap against seeing our rights stripped from us like people tried to do 25 years ago.
How likely do you think that is?
I think there's going to be a lot of controversy, a lot of noise. I don't know that we're going to go back very far.
In Colorado, at least.
Not in Colorado or even at the national level. You know, I think the new administration in Washington is much more interested in making their rich friends richer than they are in making their social conservative friends, you know, have a victory dance over the death of our civil rights. You know, if it's not about money, I don't know how big a motivator it is for them. We'll see. But I'm feeling like we're going to have a good shot at fighting back and holding on to what we've earned so far. At least I'll be part of that fight.
So we may all end up poor, but we are going to be able to hang on to our civil rights, is your perspective.
For what they're worth, perhaps, yes.
Okay. And I guess when we look at some of the intersections of our communities, There's others that it seems like their civil rights are much more tenuous.
Yes.
Than just the one identity of GLBTQ. There's other identities.
And this has been going on for a while, Karen. I mean, there was a point in time, you know, when the LGBTQ community was the pariah. And we've been steadily watching the immigrant community move into that preferred position now as the, you know, biggest target in terms of groups that have political targets on their back. I think that trend will continue. I think that people, I think LGBT people have been more and more assimilated into the broader culture. We're married, we're forming families. You know, the sky never fell when any of those things happened. Life has gone on. I don't think they can reverse marriage equality or family law protections or civil rights protections for the LGBT community. I feel relatively secure in our rights in that regard. I think there are others in our society who are much more vulnerable. And these are people of color, people who have come from different countries, regardless of their immigration status, whether they're legal immigrants or not. You've been hearing these horrible stories lately. Also, just low-income people. I also, you know, just there are other people that live on the margins of our society, and I think they are going to become more marginalized. They're at risk of becoming much more marginalized in these political times that we're entering. I just feel like the LGBT community, we've diversified our holdings. We're everywhere, and we're pretty visible, and we're pretty secure in those positions, which is not to say we don't need to be vigilant. It's not to say that a religious freedom, you know, law that would grant people a right to discriminate based on their religious beliefs isn't a threat. But I think there are other communities facing much larger threats. And we need to be mindful of that and work together. Because when I stand with women, you know, to fight for reproductive health care rights, or I stand with immigrants to fight for their rights, I'm hopeful that if the focus shifts to our rights, we can count on those other groups to stand with us.
I think that's really important for us to remember. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory. If you're just tuning in, I'm Karen Rayforth, and I'm speaking with Pat Stedman, who just completed his work as a senator for Colorado since 2009. So, Pat, when you think about advice you might give to some of our younger listeners, what do you suggest to them?
Well, Karen, I remember being a young activist and looking for some place that I could plug in and that I could contribute. And fortunately for me at the time, right when I was wanting to do these things, the religious conservative movement was putting my community right squarely in the crosshairs and targeting us for legal discrimination. And so it was easy to know where to go and what call to answer and how to get involved. Today, I think it's a little more challenging. And, you know, the amount of organizing work and just the level of activism that we're seeing in the country, the number of people that are showing up to march and showing up to protest, it's amazing. It's encouraging. We need to keep that momentum going. I worry that there's so much happening that there may not necessarily be focus or coordination. The messages may be kind of blunting each other. There are too many things to complain about, and frankly, I think folks in Washington are, you know, purposefully doing all kinds of things to distract us. You know, it's really easy to get upset about something outrageous when quietly behind the scenes, new cabinet appointees are changing the rules and, you know, reversing progress that's been made. For our community, this has already happened in less than a month of the new Trump administration. The guidance that the Obama administration had put out about this question around restroom access or just civil rights protections for transgender individuals, the new Attorney General and the new Department of Justice under the new administration already signaling that they're going to walk away from all of those things. And whatever gains we had made are no longer going to be secured by the force of federal enforcement agencies. It's going to be up to us to secure those gains.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree that there's some big things happening, and those quiet things are probably the most insidious, that some of the things that already got taken away around the environment, the transgender bathroom issue. I noticed little teeny article in the paper about that, it went away the day after Sessions was confirmed. And there's a lot of things that I think you're right are evaporating, or that we assume are set, but it was a rule or it was a guidance or something that a lot of us don't understand. What do you mean? I thought that was resolved. No, it's been changed. And so there's a lot of sneaky, just quiet changes, just blowing things out that we thought were secured and are now gone.
They're quiet because they're expecting you to be paying attention to something else, you know? Kellyanne Conway starts hawking Ivanka Trump's fashion line on cable news networks, and that's all we talk about while federal agencies are rolling back rules and protections.
Mm-hmm. As well as getting rid of employees and people that are in there that are knowledgeable about what's been going on, have worked on some of these policies, procedures, guidances, slowly but surely. I know some of us said, well, why didn't you get that done a year ago? You know, now they're being overturned because it came at the end. But there's a whole process that there's an implication from the very top that you just wave a wand and things go away. And not usually, though.
Well, but there is a new sheriff in town. And we need to keep an eye on the policy that's coming from this new administration and not just the politics and the theater.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest danger, because the theater is the most compelling.
It's easy to get drawn in. It's easy to find yourself talking about this stuff. It's easy, you know, there are a lot of interesting characters that are populating the stage right now, like Kellyanne Conway and other people in clown suits like her. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Keep your eye on the prize. Pay attention to the policy. There is a lot at stake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to a certain extent, one of the things I went back to your question, what do I say to young activists? Just realize that, you know, Tip O'Neill was right. All politics is local. And the place to start is local. The place you're going to have the easiest success, the easiest time meeting others who are aligned in their views and objectives, it's going to happen locally. Let that, you know, start small. Start from the ground up. Let it build. Don't think that you have to, you know, take on Cory Gardner or Neil Gorsuch in your first outing. There is a lot of great work to be done right here in our own communities, working with your school board, working with your city council, working with your county officials, working with the state legislature, working with special districts like the RTD. Or, you know, there's a lot of government services that affect us in a very real and very immediate way that we don't pay enough attention to the policy issues, the challenges or the changes that are coming from those very local things, like transit, for instance, and RTD. If you're wanting to get more involved, if you've got this energy and this drive and you want to make a difference, realize your biggest impact is probably doing that somewhere near your own backyard or your own school district or your own city government or your own state legislature. The further out you go, the harder it is to be effective, the harder it is to be heard. Learn your lessons, cut your teeth, meet friends, and get organized, and find strength in numbers by starting local.
So how does that square with all the theater going on at the national level and the implications that doom and gloom, our lives are really being messed up at the national level, by going back to working on a school board or RTD or a city council? Or...
Well, because, you know, and this may sound cynical, but, you know, after serving an office a number of years and being term limited, I think I have a right to be cynical. They probably are going to screw stuff up in Washington. It's probably going to be bad news. It's going to be bad stuff coming down. And how we're going to respond, how we're going to deal with it, how we're going to get through is by surviving at the local level, by making sure my school district holds it together while Betsy DeVos is the U.S. Secretary of Education. All right? My local school board can do an awful lot to not take the bait or not fall into the traps of policies that may be coming from this new administration. We can hold it together right here locally if we're strong and we're focused.
That's a good argument for really having more impact at the local level, as well as realizing that the city, the county, region, as well as the state still has lots of power.
And lots of ways that they touch your lives every day. You know, some of the most satisfying things I did working in the state legislature, and particularly on the Joint Budget Committee and working with the state budget where you've got, you know, money and resources to put into solving problems, was the things that really affect people in their real lives. It's you know, is college tuition affordable in our state? Is childcare affordable in our state? What's the quality of our healthcare system? You know, do we have a criminal justice system that is punitive and biased, or do we have a criminal justice system that's really built on making communities safer and stronger? There's a lot you can do that impacts your quality of life, the value of your home, or the quality of the education your kids are getting, the quality of the air or the water that we have to consume. You know, all of these things are very close to us and very much impacted by state and local government. And there's a lot of good work to be done there.
How did you first get involved with politics?
It was Amendment 2. You know, I had just graduated from law school. I went to the University of Colorado. Graduated in 1991 and started paying attention to the world after I got through studying for the bar exam that whole summer. That's what you do. You kind of go into this little cocoon sort of thing and study for the bar exam for months. I came out and saw that the folks that were trying to take away my rights, who had already lost and you know, brought a fight and lost it at the city and county of Denver. We stopped them from taking away our civil rights protections in Denver. Well, they went to the next level and they decided they'd put it into the state constitution that I couldn't have civil rights. And that completely was just outrageous to me. I mean, when I first read their proposal, I said, this is unconstitutional. How can this happen? Lo and behold, it did. We had to file a lawsuit and take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court to overturn the damn thing. That's how I got involved. And what started out licking stamps and stuffing envelopes and, you know, showing up and holding a sign at a rally turned into volunteering, turned into a paid position, turned into a career, turned into the avenues that eventually led me to elective office. It was just getting involved, showing up, keep showing up, put in your time, meet people, network, organize, learn, and when that time comes, you may find yourself called to a leadership position. It happened to me, and my story is really not that unique.
What's next for you?
Well, there is life after the legislature. It's a very hard transition being term limited, you know, and particularly, you know, I kind of went out at the top of my game. I was on the Joint Budget Committee. I had control over a lot of things in the state budget. I was very influential in a lot of policy areas. I, you know, have so many things that were rewarding and satisfying to me personally that I got to work on. And I know I touched a lot of lives and I met so many people all across the state as I did this. And then it just ends and somebody else gets to do that. And you don't get invited to all the things you used to get invited to, or somebody new, and you just get to move on. And so I've got a new job, and it's relevant, and it's interesting, and it's keeping me somewhere near some of the things I used to do in the legislature. But I'm still looking for other ways to stay involved, other things to keep showing up for and making a difference in. I'm not going away, even if, you know, in the political arena, it's somebody else's turn.
Mm-hmm. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll see what the next moves are for Pat Stedman. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Karen. Thanks.
Now for some news and events. Yesterday was the 75th anniversary of the Executive Order 9066, which cleared the way for Japanese Americans and, to a lesser extent, German Americans and Italian Americans to be interned and watched by the military during World War II. Two-thirds of the Japanese Americans detained in internment camps were actually U.S. citizens, and most of the others had been in this country for up to 30 years. So we want to remember this misguided attempt by Homeland Security, not dubbed that yet, but essentially Homeland Security, to be careful we don't fall into the same trap once again. And given that it's President's Day, let's rededicate ourselves to making our presidents the leaders we want to have lead us. Upcoming news item. This Thursday on the 23rd, the JBT Center for Colorado in Denver is holding a fundraiser, Jokers, Jewels, and Justice. It's their gala to raise money for their legal program, and it is a dinner, entertainment, silent and live auction, and not to be missed. Information and tickets quickly, glbtcolorado.org. Also, on March 2nd to the 4th, catch a performance of As One, a chamber opera about a transgender person's inner journey. It's up at Federal Heights, the Pinnacle Charter School. Check out operacolorado.org for more information and tickets. Next week on Outsources, Angela returns 6:30 every Monday night, or news.kgnu.org, or search the archives for Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth. Good evening.